Welcome back to Marvel Good Yay, our brand new spin-off series of the Geek Easy podcast, where we are going back and discussing every single Marvel Cinematic Universe film leading up to the release of Avengers Endgame. I am Pixel Dan.
Jonathan Leonard.
And Jaron McCaffrey.
And today's topic of discussion, the Mighty Thor. I'm excited.
Yeah, this is always a fun rewatch.
Yeah.
It's one of those, like, I always know I love Thor. I never quite remember how much I love Thor, like, if I'm not in the middle of watching it.
There's always, like, moments of this movie that I remember fondly and recall. Like, I think specifically the easy go-to is, I'll have another! And the drink, the glass smash thing, you know? Yeah. It's like the one thing you always remember about this movie. But I don't think I have watched this movie in many, many years.
Really?
So this was my first time. I probably watched it a few times when it first came out. Like, I definitely probably saw it in the theater twice or so and then watched it when it came out. But it's probably been since then, since I've seen this one again. So this was a lot of fun to go back and, like, re-experience.
Yeah, that was 2011.
I know, yeah.
Or, yeah, 2010?
So this would have been...
You're supposed to know these things, John.
Well,
I've probably seen this one more than the rest.
Yeah.
But there's a weird thing with this one for me where it's on a line where it's really good, but I can put it on and have it on in the background and not get, like, so drawn in and engaged to it.
Okay.
Like, you know, if I put on like Winter Soldier and I have something else to get done, it ain't getting
done.
That
other thing's not getting done.
Yeah.
That makes total
sense. I can have Thor on in the background, and I love it, but I'll get done what I need to get done.
Yeah.
So this was a go-to for me for a while where it was like, well, I just want to put this on while I'm, you know, doing this other thing.
Okay.
So cool. I've seen this one a ton.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And it was May of 2011. I was thinking it was a Thanksgiving movie for some reason. That's why it wasn't mentioned in my head. But that obviously Ragnarok was a November movie, but this one was a summer kickoff again. And then Captain America would have been July of that year.
Yeah, the
which
same
I
year,
thought
right?
was a May movie. Because most of them have been, so that's I'm just getting all my sequels mixed up. But yeah, they were the same year because this is a 2011 was a 2-installment year. 2012 was just the Avengers, and then we got kicking it back off into the multiple realm right there. So,
yep, May of 2011, starting off the summer again with another Marvel movie. We've got a budget of around $150 million. We've got a domestic gross of $181 million. So it made all its money back in the States and then some overseas. Grand total worldwide is $449 million on this one. So continuing that string of Phase 1 installments where they're expensive but not ridiculously expensive to make, but they're all making gangbusters at the box office, like well more than, not necessarily more than highest imagination could take you. Because boy, do they start making more and more after toward the end of Phase 1 and going into Phase 2, you can really start to see these impressive numbers really start to increase by magnitude. But this follows that trend where they keep coming out with these first installments, and everyone's really happy with them, and they're not getting as many repeat viewings, but everybody's going to see them already. So,
awesome. Awesome. So where do you guys want to start with Thor?
I want to start with the title screen on the Blu-ray. It is gorgeous.
Oh.
It's like, it's, I think it's actually, it's the end, the, like the credit sequence where it's like flying through space, but they've like added in Mjolnir. So Mjolnir is like flying through the wormhole and blasting through this galaxy. I don't know. I'm enthralled. Like I literally sat there and watched it cycle through like 3 or 4 times. I just like, this is gorgeous.
This is the best part of the movie. No. I love this movie.
Not the best part. First thing that jumped out at me for sure.
Yeah.
So that's where I want to start. I don't know where do you guys want to start.
I got it off of Google Play, so I didn't get the cool title sequence there. But
I'll bring it over and show it to you sometime, bro.
Let's have a Blu-ray menu watching party.
I'll bring Memento, and we'll all be confused.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess we can just dive right into the movie itself. Yeah. Anybody else? Nobody else has any other setup stuff going in? This is our first experience with Chris Hemsworth in the Marvel Universe.
It is, yes. Yep. Yeah, well, and I guess it's also worth noting that this is our first real big leap off of Earth and into this kind of realm of the Marvel Universe, which is kind of one of those things where it shows that they're getting a little gutsy with the stuff that they're doing, right? Because the big thing with superhero movies right before the MCU really booted off was everything was so grounded in reality. It had to be grounded in reality so that the general public will understand and watch it.
Yep.
And this was kind of Marvel's first go at, well, we're just going to straight go and make this movie about some Norse gods, you know, and out in outer space where there's all these different realms and all these, you know. So this was kind of our first leap into seeing, like, the whole galaxy aspect of the Marvel Universe, which obviously gets expanded upon going forward and becomes a big part of the whole thing. So that's kind of cool.
They really expanded on the world building with stuff like that. Yeah. They start to introduce these other concepts. They do a lot with, despite the fact that this is a leap into the realm of fantasy, because they are doing the Norse god stuff. They are off planet or off dimension, or however, I guess it would just be off planet. Space and dimensions all sort of start to blur together.
Yeah.
But they make a big deal in this movie to sort of explain the background of that, between the dichotomy between magic and science.
Yep.
And there's several points in the movie where they kind of bring that mix up. And I feel that sort of, despite the fact that they're getting more grand, they're also grounding it in their own way, and in their own universe, because they're giving you these bigger events and these flashier stories and just the more colorful environments and all that stuff, but they're giving it to you in a way where you can go, you know, it's still grounded in our reality.
Right.
Like, we still have a structure, and it fits into that. So it's not the, this is how it would happen if Thor were real, but it is very much like, we've built our world, and this is how it starts to interlock with each other, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, very cool. So this, I'm trying to remember, this started like...
starts with Thor and Loki. Well, it starts with Odin giving the backstory on the war.
That's
the
right.
The Frost Giant War.
Didn't it start with the scientists?
Oh, yeah.
It starts with the scientists, and that the Bifrost sort of opens up in front of them, and they are driving into it. Looks kind of like a tornado, and she hits Thor with the van.
Yeah.
You know, and gets out, tries to make sure he's not... Or I think it skips right there.
Yeah,
because she does get out to make sure he's not dead. And then it's
we don't really see...
Yeah. It's like, where did he come from?
Yep.
And then you go over to Odin.
Jump back. Yeah,
Odin giving the overture about the...
Frost Giants.
Yeah, the Frost Giants, and the conquering the Nine Realms and then returning home to Asgard. You see a little bit of a scene with Odin and his two sons when they're younger.
Yeah.
And you get a little bit of foreshadowing of their attitudes there.
In the treasure room.
Yep. Yeah,
in the treasure room. We also get the Wise King line there, which stood out to me. Comes back into play later.
Yeah.
Where he's where he says... You know, a wise king never seeks war, but is always prepared for it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, the treasure room's fun, too. I remember that being like a big Easter egg kind of thing back in the day, where you were looking for the different stuff in the background.
Yeah. That's when you were waiting for this to come out on Blu-ray so you could pause
it
and see everything.
Well, because there's the clear shot of an Infinity Gauntlet in this movie in the treasure room, which is funny because that comes back later on. They do a callback to that. Once Ragnarok rolls around, but at the time when we didn't know where everything was going, that was one of those things that was like, oh my god, that's the Infinity Gauntlet right there. And it was just like a cool moment.
Yep.
So we get the whole scene now where they're adults, because it's like the crowning ceremony, right? Like we get to see Thor as he's going to be the new King of Asgard or whatever.
Yeah.
I gotta say that I love how full on like comic we get with their looks in this part, because Thor is wearing the winged helmet, which we don't get a whole lot of after this, but he's wearing the winged helmet. Loki does wear his a lot more often, but I love that they just went full on with, like, he's got the big gold helmet with the big giant horns on it, just like you would see in the comics. And there he is.
And I feel like, I'm sure they weren't sitting around the office coming up with this stuff and going, you know, well, we'll show all of those guys who say it can't be done. But at the same time, I feel like this movie is where they really make that statement that,
yeah,
you know, we can do anything that,
yeah,
the comics,
yeah,
can do.
Exactly.
So no more of that. I remember when the first X-Men movie came out and everybody's like, well, this, you know, you can't have Wolverine wearing yellow.
Yeah.
It doesn't look right on film. And you can't have him wearing spandex because it just looks ridiculous when you do that stuff.
It just doesn't work.
You got to movieize it, you know, or, yeah, whatever. And Marvel's just like, nope, we drew it, and now we can put it on screen, do whatever we want, and it looks great.
Yeah, I know. It's so good. I love it. Where did we go?
So there's a line here I wanted to bring up.
Okay, all right.
Because it made me laugh, because Odin is... you know, complimenting Thor and preparing to make him king, right? And he's talking about Mjolnir, and he's like, "And you wield Mjolnir, you know, a powerful weapon to kill and a powerful tool to build." Six movies, man, he ain't nailed one hammer, like not one nail. You know, he ain't put up not one wall.
He's never built anything,
yeah,
like that thing.
Yep.
That's amazing. So,
that just made me laugh.
Well, we get the break-in, right?
We get the break-in.
So the ceremony gets interrupted by the Frost Giant break-in. They're,
yep,
breaking into the treasure room or whatever, which puts a halt to the whole thing, and they decide to postpone it, right?
Well, and they rocket it forward there to really building Loki's character, because,
yeah,
they give you that scene where they're trying to figure out what's going on, and it's, you know, Thor and their group of friends, the Lady Sif and the Warriors Three,
yeah,
and Loki and Thor are kind of off to the side, and Loki's just right in his ear,
yeah,
all the time, you know, like, hey, you know, I think you're right about everything. This is crazy. We got to go kill all these guys. And Thor gets up and is like, all right, here's what we're doing. And everybody, you know, is like,
yeah,
try to talk him out of it, and then they go do it.
Well, and Loki, too, is then immediately like, oh, yeah, well, we can't do that.
I mean, he's really playing that role of
how,
just the devil on the shoulder.
How great is Loki? From the very beginning.
Oh, yeah.
From the very beginning.
He is just, like, the standout, like, amazing character in these movies. Gosh, mm-hmm, I love Loki so,
yeah,
much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's good stuff. So we get that scene, then, where we get to really see, like, the Frost Giant scene, which is pretty awesome stuff, where we get our first taste of, like, the Thor fights.
Yep.
Which,
yeah,
is awesome. Just watching him wield the hammer in a movie the way you always kind of imagined it probably would play out in the comics, but, you know, they're like, it was one of those things too, like, you know, you always saw Thor like flying with the hammer, but like the thing with his hammer was like he threw it,
yeah,
and that's what made him fly. And it's like, it wasn't until like you see that actually happening in this movie that you're like, yeah, man,
yeah,
like that's
right,
that's,
yeah,
it right
there. I was
just saying,
like,
awesome.
seeing it in live action made Thor cool.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
immediately.
Yeah,
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 exactly. Yeah,
like he looked like he stepped right out of a comic book. He talked in that, you know, when you read the old English, it doesn't have quite the same effect as when you hear it.
He just
kind of had this presence about it to him, and then the fights start, and you're watching that, and you're like, all these times I saw these pictures of this weirdo with a dumb hammer, and I had no idea he was awesome.
Yeah.
I had no idea he was awesome. Yeah, man.
So one thing I want to critique about that, or mention about that scene.
Okay.
They shoot Laufey. Is that how you say the Frost Giant's king?
Yes.
Laufey.
Yes.
They shoot him so weird. You know, like what one... They never do any shot of him where it looks like he's even in the same building as Thor and his friends. Two, they keep doing, and I always call it the Morticia shot.
Oh, with like, where, the
like
light on,
yeah,
the...
where like everything is in shadow except his eyes.
Yeah,
you know, and I'm just like, which is a Dracula shot. That's how they shot Dracula in the old,
yeah,
the original Universal's thing. I know that, but I always think of it as the Morticia shot.
Totally.
And they do that to him like the whole time. You know, I just thought it was really odd that they shot him that way.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
Yeah,
honestly, but
stood out to me.
Probably
right
just
away.
Saved a bunch of money on CG.
I guess, man. I guess just do the makeup and black everything out. You know, just do the makeup around the eyes. We're good. But you know, I remember noticing that. Like, it stood out to me here. I remember noticing that way back, like when I first saw it. You know, maybe not necessarily the first time I saw it, but
okay,
like that was always a weird scene to me. So. That stood out to me. I do love that scene though. I love the whole when they send out the big giant monster and then Thor kills that instantly.
I know. Oh, it's so good. Yeah.
So,
it's,
yeah.
It's all super fun stuff.
And then Odin shows up and saves the day.
Yep.
Takes them all back to Asgard. Is a little on the upset side.
Just a little.
But they jump right into it. And that's one of the things I like about this, too, is because they tell... I feel like this movie tells, like, two or three stories.
Yeah.
But concisely.
Yep.
It's not bloated. It's not too short to where it's confusing. It's not too long where they're just throwing stuff in. But they go straight from... that scene right there to back in the, you know, the Bifrost room with Heimdall, and Odin's just on Thor and just immediately strips him of his powers, tells him he's not worthy, kicks him straight back to, was it Midgard is what they call it?
Yeah, Midgard. Know,
just kicks him straight to Earth.
Exiles him,
but puts that little, you know, the little hex on Mjolnir, like sends that back also with those words, you know, whoever holds the hammer, be he worthy, will wield the power of Thor, and sends that back too. But they do that as sort of an aside, like I can't even tell if Loki noticed that, because he really does it like under his breath and kind of sends it through, and then boom, you're into now the B story, I guess, or whatever. Yep. And you're into the fish out of water tale, where they flash you right back to where he's getting. They show you him getting hit by the van again, and now you're back with the scientists, with Natalie Portman and friends.
To kind of
pick up on the Earth story.
Yeah.
So it's just really nice how quick they can make that transition, but without it feeling like you're jolted. You know, like you're just traveling with them section to section.
Yep.
Before we move any forward, can we talk about Thor's hair?
Yes,
because
I think we need to.
We do, and it was one of those things that stood out to me a lot in this movie, and I would keep noticing it throughout the movie. There's something
weird.
Okay, so is it a wig, or did they dye it like a super unnatural color of blonde, or like what is going on with it?
I thought it looked like they fried it. Accident, like they dyed it so blonde it like fried it.
Yeah,
because I thought it looked really like straw, just like hay on his head.
Something, and you know,
I assumed wig because of the same reason.
Yeah,
he just looked off, but that could be
well
be it too.
Because I also noticed his eyebrows look way brighter. Like they tried to dye his eyebrows to match his hair. So there's just like his whole face looks off because of it. You know, like there's just something very different about him. And you know, we wouldn't have noticed it when we first saw this movie, but seeing Thor so many times since, it really stands out. Especially because we're only two movies away from Avengers, and he doesn't look like this at all in Avengers.
Right.
Like, by the time Avengers rolls around, he's got darker, like, more natural-looking, like, dirty blonde hair, and his eyebrows look natural. So, like, yeah, there's some weird stuff going on here.
Yeah.
I don't know what they were... I don't know if they just felt they needed to make him look like... super blonde, like comic book Thor, or like
probably,
yeah. So,
I assume
probably just nobody was taking it seriously because it's a Thor movie,
okay.
And then they saw it and they were like, man, we should have paid attention.
Wait, so does that mean that they didn't care about the helmets and stuff too, but those just worked? And
maybe,
and then the hair didn't, okay.
Maybe.
All right. Oh man, all right. So, we're on Earth, we're on Midgard.
Yep, so, we're on Midgard.
So,
You know, the movie, the pacing keeps up real well, like I was saying a minute ago, because it really, like, looking back, when you get to the end of this movie, you look back and it feels like you've been watching it for like 45 minutes to me, because everything happens so smooth. But that's not to say that's not a problematic point, I don't think. It's
right.
Just one of those things where you can't believe how much has happened in as short of a time as it has been, because they really get right on the move. They do the scene where he wakes up, and you know you can tell he's still strong as an ox.
Yeah.
But he's not Thor strong.
Right.
Because all you know he wakes up at the hospital and starts trying to get out and starts throwing orderlies around the room. But then they still you know slow him down enough to drug him.
Yeah.
I did love how like he woke up from that again, and they had him like tied to the table and. He couldn't strength his way out of the restraints, so he just slipped his hand out.
Yeah,
like,
yep.
who tied that? What in the world? You know, like, why was that so easy? But they do that fun bit where, you know, Jane Foster goes looking for him and he's already gone. And so she gets back in the van and they're, or the little Jeep, and they're having their talk about finding him, and she backs right into him again.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
She just keeps hitting him with a car.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
And then they get him back to the apartment and they do the fun little throwback to the Donald Blake.
Yeah.
Which is like the old secret identity.
Right.
That, you know, I don't know that much about Thor. I knew that was a secret identity. I don't know exactly how it worked. It was like, didn't he have to say a, wasn't it almost like a Shazam?
Well, I thought it was just when he picked up the hammer he became Thor.
Was that it?
I have no idea.
I thought there was a transformation of some sort.
I thought the hammer disguised as like a staff or something.
Jack Kirby was the only one who ever read Thor comics, man. Like,
wow.
Come on.
But again, it was just a neat little throwback
to
the past, which Marvel's been really good at doing with all of this stuff. And then it gets into more of the, you know, there's a lot of that pseudoscience talk in this movie, but yeah. It's not like,
oh, Jaren,
it's
not, get it.
Well, but it's not like it was in Iron Man 2 where you can easily dismiss most of it. It was just sort of, it's really working to bridge that gap between, again, like the grounded ish and the more fantastical, but to mesh them together. And they do the real easy explanation, and again, this is another point where they start to bring it up more, because Thor even says at one point, you know, like, you know, your ancestors call it magic, you call it science, but it's really the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, and Jane Foster makes a point at one point about magic just being science that we don't understand yet or something like that.
Yep.
So they keep hammering that point home. And right now, though, in this section of the movies where they're really playing up that fish out of water thing, which, man, Hemsworth is so good at that, at being larger than the scene and not knowing it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he's so much bigger than the world he's in,
yep.
But he has no idea. And he has played that to a T since scene one.
Yeah.
And it's so much fun to watch, yep. Like, all of that stuff that he does. I like also they do that scene at the diner where she's like, how did you eat an entire box of Pop-Tarts and you're still hungry? And he's just like mashing out those pancakes it ain't nothing. That's where they do the bit where he's like, drinking the coffee. He's like, I like this. I would like another. And he throws it on the ground. And she's like, what are you doing? I wanted more. Well, then just ask. He's like, I thought I did.
Such a good scene.
It's so much fun.
And then in the background of all that, they're kind of pushing the Loki story forward. You find out Loki was a frost giant himself, who's adopted. He gets into that spat with Odin. Odin ends up collapsing into a coma.
Yep.
The Odin sleep.
Yeah. I forever will love the Odinson. Thor Odinson.
Yeah.
And you get the bit later where Coulson shows up and he calls him Son of Cole.
Son of Cole. You know? Yeah. Yep.
But they're progressing the Loki storyline with the collapse there. So Loki takes the throne. Which, Warriors Three are trying to convince him to bring Thor back.
Yeah.
He's telling them he can't do it for pretty good reasons.
Yeah.
Which are obviously lies.
Yeah.
He comes to Thor to let Thor know that, you know, Odin's dead and he can never bring him back and Mother forbids it and all this stuff, which Thor totally buys. That's a little bit later into the movie because that's after we find the hammer and everything.
Well, before you get rolling too far, I just want to throw in real quick. I laughed real hard because Loki immediately goes to, like, devil on the throne. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He has that argument with Odin, and Odin collapses, and then in the next scene he's just like, you know, he's got the huge staff and his crown, and he's just, you know, all sunken back in the throne.
Yeah, dude.
Immediately, like, Satan on his throne.
Well,
you
like,
know, like,
it's like classic Loki. Like,
oh, yeah,
you always
sure.
see Loki
yeah.
sitting in the throne like that in the comics.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I love that.
Yeah,
and again,
well,
it was
perfect.
Yeah,
but I just thought it was immediate. You know, like,
it's again though, it's more of that imagery that they just flawlessly weave into this movie.
Yeah.
You know. And I think I don't think we've mentioned yet. This is a Kenneth Branagh directed this movie,
mm-hmm.
who is a very classically trained Shakespearean actor, director, all that
okay.
stuff.
Perfect.
This is the guy who played, is it Grindelwald? Mm-hmm. No, not Grindelwald. He the goofy guy in the second Harry Potter, the one who is the master. He teaches the class on the dark arts, and he's written all those books, and he turns out to be a big fraud.
Yeah. I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. So he was in the Murder on the Orient Express most recently, but yeah. I figure most of our audience probably knows him from Harry Potter.
Yeah, I can't remember that character's name, but I know who you're talking about.
I hear that.
Yeah.
But dear listeners, John just called you all nerds.
Yeah, obviously.
Oh, well.
That's why they're listening to the Nerd Easy.
The Nerd Easy.
But, I mean, they said this guy.
Marvel Nerdier?
Yep.
This guy is has done a ton of Shakespeare in front of and behind the camera. He's a very talented actor and director who's been around for decades. But he's got that very classical old English training and everything like that, too. And so I always thought going in, like, I wouldn't have pegged him as a guy who would do a Marvel movie, but it seems like an inspired choice.
Yeah.
And you really kind of feel that storytelling woven through here because they do hit all of those beats and then just keep everything running so smooth. So anyways, we're back on Earth. Thor has, they've discovered, he's heard word of the hammer having landed too. Which I thought was neat they did when they first find him way back at the beginning, when they flash back to the second time where she, the second time where she hits him with the first van.
Yeah.
And they pick him up to leave, and then as they're driving away, you see in the background the hammer come down.
Yeah.
Which I actually missed. My daughter pointed it out.
I'm
sure I had seen it in the past, but watching it this time, she's like, oh, there's his hammer. I'm like, what? Oh, yeah, neat little kind of background thing. Then they do the bit where everybody shows up and is trying to pick up the hammer and nobody can do it.
Yeah.
Then S.H.I.E.L.D. gets involved, comes in, sets up a fortress around the thing, does the bit where they come in and steal all of Jane's work, all the scientists, their stuff gets pulled, and we get to that point where Thor figures out that his hammer's out there, so he goes to get it. And then we get that fun little bit where he
tears through the entire...
He's fighting through the rain, just tearing S.H.I.E.L.D. agents apart left and right.
Which is our introduction to Hawkeye, too.
Yep. Yeah. Which I thought was funny, because Hawkeye, I feel like Hawkeye was sort of supposed to play the Black Widow role in this movie. He's that extra character that they add into the side that's a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent and kind of helpful there, except, man, did he, he had that one scene, Black Widow really took over chunks of Iron Man 2.
Right.
Hawkeye just shows up for that one. But it's really fun because he's just sitting up there the whole time like, you want me to take this guy? You want me to take this guy? And after a while, when Thor's fighting the really big guy at the end, and Hawkeye's on the radio with Coulson telling him, you might want to give me the word soon because I'm starting to root for this guy.
Yeah.
Well, they also do that silly thing too where when he finally gets the go-ahead, where he goes to fight him for the first time, they do the thing where you see the hand reach for a gun and then instead reach and grab the bow off the wall.
Oh, yeah.
which is just a fun little scene. Like to get you amped up, that's Hawkeye. There he is, the guy that uses the bow and arrow.
And this scene, man, Hemsworth looks so much bigger in this scene in particular and in this movie than he does in any of the rest of them. I mean, he's always huge. But he is so big in this movie. Yeah. They did not have a wellness policy on Thor.
Wow. you had already brought up too, because this they stop him. He obviously can't pick up the hammer.
He can't pick up the hammer.
And so
not worthy.
Yeah.
This is the scene where you mentioned Loki coming to visit him.
Yep. Because he just kind of gives up on it, and they take him away, and then Coulson's trying to question him and has to leave, and as soon as he walks out of the room, they do that. And I think it's the first time they do that bit where Loki's just projecting himself.
Which
becomes a staple of all of the movies Loki's in.
Well, he had done that. He killed the Frost Giant doing that too, though.
Well, I guess that's true.
But yeah.
I love though, because at the end of this scene, he casually walks out to the center of the crater and reaches down and tries to casually pick up Mjolnir and can't.
Yep.
And seems puzzled by the fact that he can't pick it up, so he just kind of leaves it there.
Yeah.
I love that. I think that is so cool.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
But this is where Thor just finally accepts that, he was wrong. What he did was he proved himself unworthy, and this is just what he's stuck with now. And so he's just kind of here.
Yeah.
And he just really begins to accept that. You don't get the,
Well, he also thinks that he killed Thor, or he killed Odin.
Yeah.
Loki tells him he killed Odin, and he buys that. And he thinks his mom hates him for it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So.
And he's got the weight of the world on his shoulders.
Yeah.
But they really, it's just it's a look on his face. I mean, that's what acting is.
Yeah.
But again, it's another instance of, you know, I don't think Hemsworth gets a lot of credit for being awesome.
Yeah.
I don't know if he gets as much credit as he's probably due for just being a really good actor. Because well, right here in this scene, I mean, you can just that shift in character, but you buy every second of it.
Yeah.
Because he looks like a guy who just found out his mom hates him and he killed his dad.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, totally.
You know, but, it's 10 seconds, but it's really powerful.
Well, I think that's a product of these movies, too, though. Hemsworth is really good, but every movie he has to stand, you know, almost every scene he has to stand across from Tom Hiddleston, who's on another level, or Odin.
Anthony Hopkins, yeah, there we go.
Who is incredible.
Yeah.
You know, he shares scenes with Stellan Skarsgård, who's phenomenal, you know what I mean? So he's never the best actor in a scene, you know.
Yeah.
Even when we get to the Avengers, you know, he's usually in there with, you know, he's in a scene with Robert Downey Jr. and the other Chris. Or is he not a Chris? Captain America.
Evans.
Chris Evans. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. You know what I mean? And
so many Chris's.
You know, so like he is a very good actor, and I couldn't imagine anybody else playing Thor.
Oh, no way.
You know
not
what
at
I mean?
This point, no
but
way.
But he does not get the chance
not even
to
Liam
be
Hemsworth.
Yeah, but he doesn't get the chance to ever be the best actor in the room, so that plays against, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's why
he doesn't get
that credit, I think. So
I can see that.
So I always forget Stellan Skarsgård's name in the movie. Dr.
Selvig.
Selvig. So because Selvig comes to rescue him from this point, like kind of makes up a story about who he is and gets him out, which
like,
is great.
Like so many, it's at least two scenes in a row here where Coulson just spends just going, I'm just going to watch whatever happen.
Because
they totally do that. Like Selvig just shows up, tells everybody that the guy they've captured is Donald Blake.
Yeah.
He's a doctor, you know, has fake credentials.
He was drunk.
And he was.
Well, yeah, because immediately
he's a fitness freak, you know, whatever.
Steroids.
Yeah.
Well, I told you, no wellness policy.
Yeah, because immediately they did.
They run the credentials.
It's flashing
on the screen.
Yeah,
you know?
Like they look up at Coulson, and Coulson like knows it, but he's just letting them go on with their story.
Well, and the one who runs the credentials is a Hydra agent.
Yeah, that's Jasper Sidwell.
Yes,
that's our first. I was going to mention that too. This is our first exposure to him because that guy shows up in several movies also.
Wow!
Remember,
we don't know it yet.
Yeah,
most of these guys are Hydra
agents. Well, most of them.
Yeah. But yeah, that's the guy. He was in this. He's in one of the one shots, I believe. He's in Avengers maybe he might not be, but he's definitely in Winter Soldier.
Yep.
So he's a running character.
Yeah.
That we first see here. We've got some other firsts coming up later. Well, the end credit sequence. That's the first time we see the Tesseract.
Oh, yeah.
I totally forgot.
Until
I watched it in this movie, I just accepted it as a part of the universe.
Right.
Like, I was like, oh, wait, this is where we first see that darn thing. Which becomes such a big deal. But they let Thor go. Selvig takes him to a bar, tries to explain to him, you know, he's looking out for Jane.
Yep.
And so he basically tells Thor, like, I don't really believe your stories, but you do seem to have the best of intentions, so do me a favor. I got you out of there. Now you get out of here.
Right.
You know, we'll have a few drinks, and then just don't be there in the morning. And then they have way too many drinks, so we have to take something back, carry him back.
This is another one of those awesome scenes, too, where Thor's just like... Yeah. He just is like a giant mug, and it's just like gone. Yeah. Like, oh my god, yeah. It's amazing. Yep. Yeah. Selvig is hammered.
Yeah.
And it's
we
so
drank,
good.
We fought, he made his ancestors proud.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's something I'll bring up. Because when he comes back, they drop off drunk Selvig. And then him and Jane go up on the roof and have their little romantic, intimate moment around the fire, looking up at the stars and having that conversation, and he gives her a thing back. I love these first phase movies. they have a level of intimacy that we don't, we start to lose going forward.
Yeah.
You know, the scene with him and Selvig in the bar, you know, and it's really just the two of them. This scene with him and her, and it's just the two of them just having a conversation. The scene in Iron Man when it's just him and when it's just Stark and Pepper and Obadiah Stane, you know, when he comes back and it's just them sitting there talking. Yeah. You know, we don't get scene like after this, we kind of stop having scenes like that.
Yeah, you're totally right.
Well, I mean, honestly, like, not necessarily Iron Man or Iron Man 2 so much, but Incredible Hulk and Thor and Captain America, which we'll get to in the next episode here, those are essentially love stories.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they really can be framed that way. Yeah. There's a lot more going on in the background.
Iron Man? I don't know.
No, I said not Iron
Man.
Iron Man 2, but the other three are all, you can frame any of them that way.
Okay.
You know, there's a lot going on in the background, so they're bigger than just that. They're not exactly rom-coms, but they all have that element is very strong in all of them.
Yeah.
They all have that, you know, like Iron Man has Gwyneth Paltrow as the female lead, and she's a strong character, but she's just not in that light. The rest of them are all direct heavy love interests for the, you know, the main superhero there.
Yeah.
And they do play up that aspect of all of those movies as a strong aspect of those characters. You know?
Yeah.
So
I like that aspect. One of the things I'm going to criticize about this movie is I feel like Jane Foster is a little bit like too doe-eyed girl. You know, I don't know how to. Yeah, I feel like it. She's so just like instantly fawning over this hunk, you know what I mean? Like he really hasn't done anything except kind of be a jerk, you know, at this point, you know what I mean? So really she's only just kind of fawning over him because he looks dreamy, you know what I mean? I feel like it takes away from a little bit of like the, you know, hard driven scientist that they portray her to be.
But like she never loses that drive. She never gives up on her science to help the hunk out or anything like that. She's just charmed by this guy. I mean, they're not.
I feel like they play it like she falls head over heels at first sight for him,
which is fine.
I don't like it.
What's wrong with love at first sight?
It's horse crap.
Okay.
Yeah,
we're gonna get into the cynicism now.
Well,
I would disagree.
I mean, you've seen him with his shirt off, right? Thor's a good looking dude.
Well,
I'm kind of in love with him.
Yeah.
Swoon.
Well,
I get what you're saying. I don't think you're wrong. I didn't feel it play as problematic at all. Like, it's sort of a rom-com element, but I don't think they played it up so much that it's distracting, and I don't think they undermined her character with it because there was never, you know, if they had thrown that moment in where she's like, well, forget the science, we gotta help the blonde guy, then I'd have gone with it. But she always kept her priorities on that research stuff. That was always what was driving her through the whole movie. She just also happened to have this, you know, god man show up in her lap as well.
Yeah.
And
Well maybe that plays into my one big gripe with the movie. is that it's framed as this, you know, I mean, it's basically this love story. But it's not, you know, it's one of those, I think it really falls into that category where they play up the love story just because there's a leading man and a leading woman, and that's the only way we know how to frame emotion. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, Thor wants his hammer, goes after his hammer, wants to get back home. You know, and then when he realizes he can't get back home, it's because he thinks he's exiled and he killed his dad and his mother hates him. You know, she is supposed to be doing all this other, you know, she's supposed to be trying to get her stuff back. You know, like you said, you know, all this stuff, she needs her research back and she wants to get her research and she wants to learn how the Einstein-Rosenbridge thing works and all that. But they fall in love, and he becomes worthy because they fall in love. And I think it's.
He didn't become worthy because they fell in love. He became worthy because he sacrificed himself for that, for all those people.
So okay, but why? You know, like that's my thing. You know, the only ground. So here's my thing. The only ground they build, you know, the only change in him, is that he feels guilty, and guilt should not make him worthy, and that he's fallen in love with a human woman. You know what I mean? Like those are the only changes in him. I would have, you know, I think it should have been a little more profound. If he's going to be worthy, you know, and to become king of the Norse gods, I feel like it needed something. You know, if he had spent some time in town and met everybody, and so like he was like, oh, these are good people, I'll die for these people, you know, then that turn means anything. You know what I mean? Like the turn of just, I'm gonna go get murdered for these people because I'm worthy. You know,
that's how I took it. It was him sacrificing himself, not for his girlfriend or this woman he's fallen in love with, but also these other people he's met that he's grown to like, and the fact that there are, you know, the people as a whole, like this entire town where the people are about to get murdered because he was in the wrong place at the wrong time. He's the only one who is responsible for all that stuff, and the only way he can take that responsibility is by essentially sacrificing himself. He doesn't have the power to fight him. His friends have already tried.
They got handled, right?
We're kind of rocketing forward to the end. Right. Loki sends the destroyer to take out Thor.
That's okay. I think that's a good place to be now.
Yeah.
So that Thor will be dead, and then there won't be any threat to the throne. The Warriors Three and the Lady Sif show up, or Xena. what do they call Xena, Jackie Robin. Chan, and Robin Hood as one of the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents calls them.
Yeah.
They had no joke for the fat guy. I was mad that we have a history of fat guys. They can't come up with Hagar the Horrible or
you know what I mean?
Like, you couldn't come up with one name for a big fat, you know, Gimli.
Yeah,
you
could have been Gimli.
You know
I
what
thinking.
I mean?
Like, but, you know, they show up to tell Thor that Odin's not dead,
right?
And all that, you know, that Loki's been lying to him. But this is the same time the destroyer shows up and starts wiping through this town. So plan A is, you know, his warrior buddies will go take care of it. They get handled. Plan
real
B
quick.
Is he's trying to get everybody out of town. That's nowhere near fast enough. He gets to that point where, and he doesn't. It wasn't framed in my mind at all. I never looked at it as, well, he's just trying to save the girl. I looked at it as him looking around that town and going, like, all these people are messed up, and it's going to be completely my fault. And fighting didn't work. The only thing I have left is to offer myself, because that's what they're here for. And he even gives that speech. He's like, you know, talking to the destroyer, knowing Loki can hear, says, I don't know what I did to upset you this much or why it's got to come to this, but these people didn't do anything wrong. And I don't think he was just talking about Jane and his friends. I think he was talking about all of these people.
I do too, but I think that for me that falls flat because he didn't meet any of those people. You know,
he doesn't need to.
So
like if you're king, you're not going to meet everyone in your kingdom, but you still have to serve all of them equally.
But if you're a bloodthirsty, glory hungry warrior, as he's been portrayed through the whole movie, something has to change that. You don't just decide, well, you know. So the change, I felt like the change was unmotivated, unless it was motivated by falling in love, because that's really the only thing. Because even if you say, well, he felt guilty about what he did, yeah, he felt guilty when he thought he had murdered his dad and his mom hated him. As soon as he found out that was a lie, he doesn't feel guilty for that anymore.
It wasn't guilt, it was responsibility. And even if his dad's alive, he still put him. He's still the one whose actions put all of this into motion.
I mean that's fine, except that's also barely true, because Loki, man, is super the pettiest, most poorly motivated villain of all time. like that's another thing. You know, his motivation is clear. It is all complete garbage. Everybody is super apologetic and super like handles him with kid gloves, and you know, every wrong they ever do, and every time he tries to call it out, you did this wrong, you know, why didn't you tell me? They're like, I know, I'm sorry, we're so terrible, but we love you, please, you know. And he's just like, well, nope, I'm gonna murder everybody anyway. You know, and like when he comes to Thor's like, oh brother, thank you so much for coming and giving me these lies. I'm so, you know, God, I just, man, take care of everything. You'll be a great leader. Just take care of everything, and I'll just rot down here on Midgard. And he's like, yeah, you will. Yeah, you. I'm gonna go back and murder everybody. I can't. I'm gonna help the Frost Giants come in, and then I'm gonna murder all of them. You know what I mean? Like he is just such a
He's a villain, bro.
Which I love. Which he's I love. Don't get me wrong. I love. Yeah. I have many mixed feelings on the you know, the righteous villains that we have a lot of now. I as much as I love Thanos, but we'll come to that later.
Yeah.
I have mixed feelings on that stuff. So I love it. But I feel like it is a weak justification. I love the movie. I love Thor. I'm glad he's worthy. You know, like, don't get me wrong, but on watching it and judging it with a bit more critical of an eye, his arc fell flat to me, and his decision to become worthy felt unmotivated and weak.
Yeah, I don't know. I just disagree.
I think, so, like, I was getting ready to say something, and I kind of just realized I'm probably thinking of another movie. But I know that this particularly, I think, is Thor's first experience with Midgard in person. So this is his first time interacting with any of its people, any Earthlings or anything like that. And now that I'm about to say this, I'm certain that this happens later in Avengers. But I know that there's a point in that where Loki questions why he cares about these people so much.
Yep.
And you know, we get the answer of basically because they're people. Yeah. Like, you know, and I don't know, that's just kind of the way I look at it, too. Like, yeah. I feel like Thor kind of came to a realization that, oh, there's more to life than me just being a cocky, eat, drink everything all day, fight people, and sit on the throne. There's all this going on, too. And that's maybe that realization is what helps with the whole...
And that's fine. I just don't feel like they showed that enough for me to buy him making that change. You know, like if this had been more like a Hallmark movie, you know, one of those like Hallmark Christmas movies.
Oh, no.
Where like he shows up in town and, you know, he's stranded in town and like Jane Foster he's kind of showing him around and he's meeting all these people with her. You know what I mean?
Like
that's how all those movies go. Like some rich a-hole gets stranded in some little town.
Yep.
And, you know, the one.
All right, somebody cut Thor as a Hallmark movie now.
Well, but see, I think that would have been that would have been better, and then I think that would have motivated that turn a little better. You know, if he had taken her, you know, if he had gone, if he had met somebody in the diner other than just the guy who he demanded directions from, you know, if he had more of a connection meeting the guy who couldn't sell him a cat or dog large enough to ride, you know, like if there had been some more of that to where he had met some of the people around town to then be like, well, you know, these are all good people. You know what I mean? Like then I would have felt that more. So,
well, you heard it here first. Jaren says Thor would have been better as a Hallmark movie.
So at that point, the Destroyer blasts Thor. He becomes worthy. Mjolnir pops out of its rocket stuck in and flies to him. You get the full suit up action there. And then they pull a reverse DC movie. Instead of having to fight a tornado monster, he becomes a tornado monster.
I was like, where are you going with this?
and beats the bad guy as a tornado monster. But I mean, he said he comes to and just handles the Destroyer, and that's done. Gets his way back to Asgard in enough time to stop Loki from letting a bunch of frost giants in to kill Odin.
Well, except he doesn't.
Well,
because the because that's just another ploy.
Because that's another ruse of Loki.
So Loki lets the frost giants in, and then Loki stops the frost giants.
To become hero.
Yep.
Or whatever. But then Thor.
Thor immediately shows up, and he's like, you're a liar.
Yep.
He's a liar, Mom.
I didn't do anything. But they get into their big fight. They have their back and forth, which ends with basically Loki's gonna destroy Jotunheim with the Bifrost. I'm not exactly sure how that works, but somehow he's just gonna.
Well, they kind of said that earlier. I don't know. Heimdall said because when they first went to Jotunheim, one of the Warriors Three was like, "Can't you just leave it open for us?"
Oh,
and he's like, "If I leave it open, it'll tear Jotunheim to pieces." Like, I don't know how that works either. They at least established it.
They built a bridge so big it'll destroy them all. So that's the kind of his plan, and it turns out that the only way that Thor can stop him is to basically just destroy the Rainbow Bridge,
which
knocks the Bifrost out of commission completely. And to do that, he'll have to give up any hope of seeing Jane, as it turns out, just for the near future. For very long at all.
No,
but,
they get that fixed up.
Yeah, but. Which is funny too, because they kind of like, that's how they explain it here, and then they sort of give you a sideways explanation for why he's on Earth in Avengers, we'll get to in a couple episodes, and then they just sort of forget about all of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Frost is fine again, you know?
Totally.
He makes that sacrifice. Oh, go ahead.
I forgot that it was the first Thor movie that he broke the Rainbow Bridge, and I don't know why, because I knew that that was a thing that happened, but I forgot that that was in the very first Thor movie that he broke down the bridge.
They have the scene where, you know, they break the bridge. They're both about to fall into nothingness, and Odin shows up because he just woke up and sort of catches them both. But he does that, you know, he catches them with a staff, so they're both kind of dangling on. And they have that scene where, you know, they're urging Loki to not fall to his death. And he just lets go and kind of drifts away, assumably?
Presumably
to his doom.
Yeah.
Because they do have a tendency to kill all the good bad guys and all the bad guys. They just mostly kill all the bad guys in a lot of
these
movies.
Well, that's like a bad comic book movie trope.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bad guy has to die at the end. Yeah. I've always hated that, but luckily.
So, that's where they, you know, that's where they leave us here, though.
Yeah.
We assume he's dead. There's a little discussion at the end about the fact that the bridge is broken. He's talking to Heimdall, basically asking what Jane's up to.
Yeah.
They show Natalie Portman. She's out there looking for him still, and that's just sort of kind of where they leave it off, and then boom, into the end credits there, which is also very pretty.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, like I said, I'm pretty sure it's just that. The opening screen. Okay. Yeah, but except it's got Mjolnir flying through. Yeah.
Meow meow.
Meow meow.
Meow meow.
We didn't make one meow meow, meow joke.
Yeah. You know, we didn't bring up how great Kat Dennings was in this movie either. You know, like, she was just a comic relief, but she had a few good ones.
She was fine. Totally. She was fine.
Meow meow.
I'm never too impressed with Kat
Dennings. Meow meow? What's meow meow?
I just liked when she obviously doesnn't understand what's going on, and Sylvie's like, I thought you were
at any point ever in the movie.
Yeah, that's the point, though. She's like, I thought you were a science major. She's like, political science.
She's the only one that applied.
Yeah. So, anyways, that's Thor in a nutshell, a 52-minute nutshell.
That's right. Well, and then we should just go ahead and bring up that post-credit scene, too, real quick, because that's where we get our fun little tie-in to everything and a good little look at what's something huge that's about to come, like you mentioned earlier, because Nick Fury ends up calling Selvig into S.H.I.E.L.D. headquarters, and Selvig has no idea why he's there, and he's kind of nervous about it, but that's when Fury basically...
But you brought me down here to kill me.
Yeah, yeah. And then Fury basically prevents him with this special artifact that they need his help to crack, basically. And they open up the case to show the Tesseract for the first time. The Cosmic Cube. And then that's where we get our little glimpse in the mirror that, Loki's still around. Yeah, and
get the reveal there, too. And he's controlling Selvig.
He's already controlling Selvig here, it looks like. So, yeah. Or somehow, or at least guided him there or something. Yeah. Because, so either way, we know that there's bigger plans with Loki. And
that he's not drifting through the emptiness of space.
Exactly. And we get a little bit more backstory on the Tesseract in the next movie. Mm-hmm. So good stuff there. All right, so, Jaren, do you have a rating for Thor?
Thor gets 2 Loki helmets.
Ooh.
Which means it gets 4 big bendy horns.
Oh, I like it! That's my favorite one so far. That's a good one. That's a good one. It would have had 5 full bendy horns if it was a Hallmark movie.
It would have.
Which is 2.5 Loki helmets. I really enjoyed this movie. I had a lot of fun watching it back.
Yeah.
It's of the we got to rate the batch that we've watched so far, right? Like, haven't we been doing that?
No, we were going to do them every 5.
We're going to do it by phase. Yeah. Okay, all right. So we're not going to rate them just yet.
Not just yet.
It's definitely one that I like quite a bit.
Yes.
But if I had to rank them right now, I would still put both Iron Man and Incredible Hulk above Thor, I think. Ooh. But not Iron Man 2.
I would probably put Thor Thor would probably fall real close, like right on the line. I'd have a hard time liking one better than the Incredible Hulk. One or the other. I would have a hard time liking one or the other better.
So I'm totally there with you. Yeah. It's like, it's right there. I mean, it's hard to judge.
Trying to rank phase one's going to give me a nosebleed.
It's hard. It's super hard. I know. Awesome stuff. Well, there we go. That is our look back at Thor. Very, very fun movie. And we've got much, much more to come. We are just now finally starting to get towards the end of phase one, but we got some good movies to look forward to. So if you guys are enjoying our little look back, please make sure to follow us on iTunes and Stitcher or Podbean or Google Play or wherever you listen to podcasts. And be sure to rate and review us as well. We are just under the Geek Easy podcast feed. So all of our podcasts go under one feed there. I think there was a little bit of confusion at the beginning. Some people were like looking for Marvel Good Yay as a separate show. But it's all under the same feed. So just hit that one feed. You'll get all of our shows right there. You can also find us on YouTube. Just do a search for the Geek Easy Podcast, and you can watch the video format of the show as well. And you can always head on over to Facebook, do a search for Geek Easy Podcast, and you can leave us feedback there as well.
If you want to watch the video versions of the Marvel Good Yay episodes, you may get a special surprise here and there.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Anybody that's been watching the video versions knows exactly what we're talking about, but there's definitely some fun extras at the end of every episode of the video version. So
make sure you check out the video versions and make sure you watch it all the way through to the end.
All the way through to the end. No skipping. You can skip if you want, I guess, but all right, guys, well, make sure you join us next time where we'll be covering Peggy Carter the movie. I'm really looking forward to that.
One of my favorites.
It is definitely one of mine. Definitely one of mine. All right, guys, until next time.
Marvel Good Yay.
The Geek Easy Podcast is a production of PixelDan.com. Musical tracks used in the intro and outro are used with full permission of the respective owners or creators. Intro and outro narrations are provided by me, Brian T. Stevenson. PixelDan.com's The Geek Easy Podcast is provided for entertainment purposes only. The views expressed are those solely of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily represent those of PixelDan.com or any other party. Be sure to join us next time for another installment of the Geek Easy Podcast.